5 Israeli hostages killed in Hamas captivity recovered from an underground tunnel network in northern Gaza as fighting continued on Sunday. Christmas Eve. At the Vatican, during Christmas Eve Mass, the faithful pray for peace.
No more war, maybe, hopefully. Maybe more calmness, more togetherness, yeah.
And the mighty Colorado River feeds water to the U.S. Southwest's largest cities, including Los Angeles. After 23 years of drought, the water flow is near collapse.
We have to deal with this hotter and drier, the more arid climate now.
Today is Monday, December 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Israel continues its military operations against Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group, and its allies on Christmas Eve into Christmas Day. With Israeli strikes on Gaza continuing, more than 166 Palestinians were reported killed in the past 24 hours, according to the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry. Israel says the number of Israeli soldiers killed in combat over the weekend rose to 15, bringing to 161 the total number of soldiers killed since Israel's ground operations started in the Gaza Strip. In the United States, VOA's Arash Arabasadi says U.S. officials are warning of heightened threats due to the conflict.
Christmas Eve in Gaza, the Israeli military releases footage claiming to show snippets of what it described as intense operations in northern Gaza and to the south in Khan Yunis. Israel says its strikes target areas of Hamas infrastructure. Meanwhile, Palestinians in Khan Yunis gathered the bodies of their dead ahead of a funeral service following an overnight airstrike. Much of the world has for weeks been calling for extended breaks in fighting to deliver desperately needed aid to civilians living in Palestinian territories. U.S. President Joe Biden, wishing reporters a Merry Christmas, said he had a long talk with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Biden called the details private, but said he did not ask for a ceasefire. Meanwhile, in Tel Aviv, Netanyahu spoke at his weekly cabinet meeting. He confirmed the conversation with Biden, adding that Israel is a sovereign state with wartime considerations that would not be dictated by external pressures. The conflict in Gaza threatens to spill outside the Middle East, with U.S. officials warning of a spike in anti-American sentiment due to Washington's support of Israel. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week, as posted on X, formerly known as Twitter.
We're helping Israel deal with the destruction of Hamas, defending themselves after October the 7th. Jihadist groups all over the world are calling on their members to attack America as payback for us helping Israel.
The Hamas-controlled Gaza Health Ministry says at least 20,000 Palestinians have died since the campaign against the group began following the October 7 attacks that killed 1,200 in Israel. U.S. officials say there is concern the country's support for Israel may bring blowback to the American homeland. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week, as posted on X, formerly known as Twitter.
The current conflict is causing, I think, contributing to a heightened threat environment. What we are seeing is foreign terrorist organizations taking advantage and calling upon their adherents to act, to do something. And then we're seeing individuals and small groups that we worry will basically take twisted inspiration from the conflict overseas and from the very searing images that we're seeing that came out of the brutal, brutal terrorist attacks that occurred on October 7th.
At a time when Christians celebrate Christmas, a mostly silent night creeps through one of the religion's most important cities. Palestinian Minister of Tourism Rula Maya speaking with Reuters.
The whole world is celebrating Christmas this year, but not Bethlehem, not the birthplace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Bethlehem is celebrating Christmas with sadness and sorrow because of what's happening in Gaza and in all the West Bank, all Palestinian territories.
Bethlehem's churches this year framed the nativity theme depicting the birth of Jesus Christ in barbed wire and rubble, a show of solidarity with the people of Gaza. Officials here say tourism this year dropped from 2.3 million up to September to no tourists since. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
As the war grinds on, public support for the war among Israelis is being tested. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with VOA's Middle East correspondent Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
It's day 79 of the war, and I think this is one of the most protracted, if not the most protracted, conflict that Israelis have ever had, and it's taking a toll. You know, people are feeling tired. It was a bad weekend in terms of Israeli casualties. There were 15 Israeli soldiers killed in a bunch of different incidents over the weekend, which is a lot for a, you know, such a small country, bringing the number to, I think, 152 or something. So the mood is heavy, sad, and I think people are kind of growing tired of the war. But that said, there's still kind of a sense that now that Israel has started, that it would be a mistake to end it before the goals are achieved. Although there are some reports that possibly some kind of a deal for the end of the war is starting to come together.
Also, is there any possibility of a deal for another exchange of hostages for Palestinians held by Israel?
Right. So Israel definitely wants that deal where 40 hostages would be released. There are still about 100 and more than 120 hostages being held by Hamas again for, you know, 79 days now. And there's concerns for the health of all of them, really. So Israel's very happy to do this deal in which 40 hostages would be released, an unspecified number of Palestinian prisoners, and there would be a 1 to 2 week ceasefire. Hamas has rejected that deal and said there will only be another release of hostages if Israel agrees to a long-term ceasefire and to end the war completely. Now, Egypt is apparently floating this plan in which what I just spoke about would be the first stage of a deal, but it would lead to a complete ceasefire and some sort of a joint Palestinian Authority, Hamas, technocratic government in charge in Gaza. Now, that doesn't seem to be something that Israel would accept, because Israel has all along said that it won't accept Hamas as a leader of Gaza. There were also some interesting press reports, and I wasn't able to, you know, really find out how serious they are, that Israel has always threatened to assassinate the leaders of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, Mohammed Deif, and others who are believed to be hiding in these underground tunnels, some of which Israel has uncovered. And now that perhaps as part of a long-term deal, they could be sent to Qatar, where the political leadership of Hamas is, and instead of being assassinated. I don't know how real that is. These are these sort of unsourced reports, but I saw it in several different places today.
Has it been determined how humanitarian aid would be accelerated?
So no, Israel has agreed in principle to allow more humanitarian aid in. The situation in Gaza is getting very desperate. I mean, it's almost, I can't even describe how bad it is, where, you know, most of the population is crowded into the lower half of the Gaza Strip in UN facilities that are simply not able to deal with the huge numbers of people. These are people, many of whom were poor to begin with, sort of struggling. And then you have this crisis on top, and it's just push people over the edge. There's not enough medicine. There's not enough food. There's something like 90% of the people in Gaza have gone a full day without eating food. And the water that's there is not clean water. Now, Israel says it's willing to allow as much aid in as can be distributed. And the problem is both the distribution and the fact that Hamas is commandeering some of the aid. Israel television has shown pictures of, masked gunmen sitting on top of the trucks and kind of taking the trucks for Hamas. There's no way of knowing if that's a few trucks or if that's most of the trucks. But Israel did open a second crossing point to allow more aid in. And Israel says the problem is not Israel, but the problem is the distribution. The Palestinians say Israel is not allowing enough aid in. And there's also now such a backlog because, you know, that it takes, you know, hundreds of trucks a day in order to just meet people's basic needs. And only a few dozen trucks have been getting in most days.
That was my colleague, Kim Lewis, speaking with VOA's Middle East correspondent, Linda Grantstein, in Jerusalem. We're following these other stories from around the world. As Pope Francis delivers his Christmas Eve Mass, and with war raging in places like Gaza and the Sudan, the faithful pray for peace.
I just hope that we can all learn to love one another and respect culture and backgrounds. Yeah. So no more war, maybe?
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky issued a Christmas message assuring Ukrainians of victory over Russia. He says, step by step, day by day, darkness is losing. Also, interestingly, for the first time, Ukraine will celebrate Christmas Day on December 25th, abandoning the Russian cultural and religious heritage of celebrating on January 7th, a move aimed at distancing the country from Russian traditions. Thousands gathered in the center of Belgrade in an anti-government protest on Sunday, demanding the annulment of parliamentary and local elections a week ago that international observers said were unfair. Police fired pepper spray after a crowd tried to break into the Belgrade City Hall, where the local election commission is based. Australia has been having a rough go for the past several weeks with record flooding and drought in different parts of the island nation. Now, the country's National Weather Agency is warning of an extreme heat wave over the northern parts of the country. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports that heat waves are widely recognized as Australia's most deadly natural disaster.
A low-intensity heat wave is expected for much of the east coast starting Tuesday. In the first few days of the Australian summer in early December, local councils are setting up heat shelters to help residents escape the punishing conditions. Tony Bleasdale is the mayor of Blacktown. Temperatures can be up to 10 degrees Celsius higher than on the coast, about 40 kilometres away. He told local media.
And really, it's about saving lives. It's about protecting the community. Because of these increasing temperatures, council have set up, during certain levels of temperature, what we call cool centres, where families can go and be inside out of this incredible and terrible heat.
Christine Bayliss-Kelly, a Uniting Church minister in the Sydney suburb of Penrith, told VOA some residents struggle to cope with the heat.
The cost of electricity here in Sydney is exorbitant, and so we have people who are struggling sitting in bathrooms, sitting in cold baths, because that's the only way they can get cool.
The El Niño weather pattern is expected to fuel a scorching summer in Australia, increasing the risk of bushfires. The increasing incidence of natural disasters in Australia has raised concerns among politicians, environmental activists and scientists about the impacts of climate change. Phil Mercer, VOA News, Sydney.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. In the United States, the Colorado River supports the largest cities in the southwestern part of the country and a large percentage of the nation's agriculture. But a 23-year-long drought and a flawed allocation scheme have brought the river system close to failure. Matt Dibble has the first story in our five-part series, River at Risk.
Dust rises from parts of Lake Mead.
There's been a dramatic loss. We've lost over 70% of the lake. Some areas are just unrecognizable to me.
Lake Mead, a reservoir in Arizona and Nevada, is fed by the Colorado River and provides water for some of the largest U.S. cities and farms. It has become the most visible symbol of a looming environmental disaster faced by western states. Here at Hoover Dam, it's easy to see just how low the water levels have reached after 23 years of drought. The top of the White Ring is where water once reached during plentiful water years. Now the water level has dropped almost to the point where it would no longer be able to pass through the dam to the tens of millions of people who depend on it. The Colorado River begins as snowmelt in the Rocky Mountains and flows over 2,000 kilometers through 7 U.S. states and 2 Mexican states to the Gulf of California. In addition to Hoover Dam, there is a second massive dam and reservoir at Glen Canyon. A system of aqueducts and pipes delivers water throughout the Southwest, allowing cities like Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Las Vegas to grow, and agriculture to flourish in the desert. Use of the river's water is governed by an agreement between states signed in 1922 called the Colorado Compact. States along the river are grouped into an upper and lower basin, with each allocated the same amount of water per year, 7.5 million acre feet. An acre foot is the amount of water it takes to fill a 1 acre area to a depth of 1 foot. A later treaty promised 1.5 million acre feet to Mexico, but the compact had a fatal flaw. It overestimated the amount of water that would be available each year.
They allocated more water even than they had at that time. During the 20th century, all that water wasn't being used because the people, all of the states, the 7 states, did not have the ability to take that water and use it.
Since the year 2000, a mega drought has drastically reduced flows.
Now they're calling it aridification, which means it's not going to go away. You know, we have to deal with this hotter and drier and more arid climate now.
Over the past century, the basin states have successfully negotiated river allocations among themselves. But negotiations broke down in 2022, with fears that low water levels at Hoover Dam might soon no longer turn turbines or pass through the dam at all. The federal government signaled that it was preparing to intercede and manage the crisis.
In the Colorado River Basin, more conservation and demand management are needed, in addition to the actions already underway.
In May of 2023, the basin states ultimately agreed to the government's demand to begin conserving nearly one-third of the average annual flow. Will the cuts be taken mostly by cities that continue to sprawl despite the worsening crisis, or by farmers who currently use 80% of the water? And where does this leave Native American tribes who continue to fight for access to water they've long been promised? Or Mexico, where the end of the river barely supports a struggling ecosystem? In the parched landscape of the Southwest, the struggle over a dwindling Colorado River promises a future of complex negotiation and adaptation. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Boulder City, Nevada.
And finally, on this Christmas Day, a look at how the holiday was celebrated in the 18th century in America, the earliest days of the Republic. VOA's Saqib Ulassam visits Mount Vernon, the historic home of America's first president, George Washington. At this historic site, one of the nation's most visited, holiday traditions from the 1700s are preserved and presented to us to experience.
On a crisp December evening, as the sun sets behind Mount Vernon State, America's first president, General George Washington, prepares to greet holiday visitors at his home. The state has been preserved by experts to reflect 18th century Virginia. It was where the first president and the first lady spent time with family during the holidays.
So you'll meet guests who are dressed up, our character interpreters, talking about their experiences in 1773 and what they could talk about and what they knew during that time. And we are doing this in honor of these years leading up to our 250th anniversary of the United States of America.
Christmas tide happens but once a year.
Character actors portraying the president and his family, friends, and staff reenact the stories of Christmas's past.
So special to be here at Mount Vernon and to be able to dress up as they did in the 18th century.
Guests can visit a winter market where vendors known as sutlers sell wares and crafts and see Aladdin, a camel Washington brought to Mount Vernon to entertain his guests.
That's something that you can't often do. You know, you can read books and you can read descriptions of things that took place back then, but you can't often live part of it.
For most of the year, visitors aren't able to see the mansion in the evening, which usually closes before sunset. But with the holiday season come nighttime events.
This is our second time here, and we just really enjoy the fireworks, the celebratory atmosphere here, seeing Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's time to illuminate the sky.
Hip, hip!
Merry Christmas.
The night ends with season's greetings from George and Martha Washington and stunning fireworks.
My desire for my country would always be that they would always remember that they are all Americans and to see themselves as being partners in an ongoing experiment in popular government that can only succeed if we all consider each other part of the same union.
Mount Vernon is open 365 days a year, including Christmas Day. Saqib al-Islam, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since early December, less than a month after the horrific attack by Hamas terrorists on Israeli civilians, Yemen's Iran-based Houthi militants began to conduct almost daily drone and missile attacks against commercial vessels, transiting the Bab al-Mandeb Strait and the Strait of Hormuz. According to the U.S. Department of Defense, the Houthis have conducted over 100 drone and ballistic missile attacks, targeting merchant vessels involving more than 35 different nations. The Bab al-Mandeb Strait connects the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden, while the Strait of Hormuz is a conduit between the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea. It is an important maritime transit route. The recent escalation and reckless Houthi attacks originating from Yemen threaten the free flow of commerce, endangers innocent mariners, and violates international law, said Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
These attacks are reckless, dangerous, and they violate international law. And so we're taking action to build an international coalition to address this threat. And I would remind you that this is not just a U.S. issue. This is an international problem, and it deserves an international response.
On December 18th, Secretary Austin announced the establishment of Operation Prosperity Guardian, an important new multinational security initiative under the umbrella of the Combined Maritime Forces and the leadership of its Task Force 153, which focuses on security in the Red Sea. During a December 19th virtual meeting with top defense leaders of 43 countries and representatives from the European Union and NATO, Secretary Austin condemned the attacks on international shipping and global commerce as unprecedented and urged more nations to join the maritime efforts to counter them. Operation Prosperity Guardian is bringing together multiple countries to jointly address security challenges in the southern Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, with the goal of ensuring freedom of navigation for all countries and bolstering regional security and prosperity, said Secretary Austin. The Red Sea is a critical waterway that has been essential to freedom of navigation, and a a major commercial corridor that facilitates international trade. Countries that seek to uphold the foundational principle of freedom of navigation must come together to tackle the challenge posed by this non-state actor launching ballistic missiles and uncrewed aerial vehicles at merchant vessels from many nations lawfully transiting international waters.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.